my friend Vic Gandolfo from Google. The topic of today's fireside chat, although there is no fire, is Google Plus. And so in the past at South by Southwest, there were sessions with Mark Zuckerberg and Ev Williams, and so we thought this year we would do Google Plus. And I happen to be a fairly involved user of Google Plus, so I thought it would be great fun and very, very stimulating and perhaps even informative to do an interview with Vic. So I pitched the idea, and lo and behold, here we are. So my name is Guy Kawasaki, this is Vic, and if you don't mind, we'll just get right into it, okay? All right, thank you very much for coming. Thank you. So let's start with the basics. Now, from your perspective, what exactly is Google Plus? Because I swear, if you asked 5 Google employees what Google Plus is, you'll get 8 different answers. So define Google Plus for
probably,
us.
Probably, Guy, because it's all of those 8 different things.
Okay.
I'll give you a simple answer, and then I'll give you a little bit more color as to how we built Google Plus and why we built it. And I think that'll help explain why sometimes it's difficult to articulate what Google Plus is. At its simplest level, Google Plus is a social layer across all of Google's services. That's the single sentence. Now, it turns out that we have some objectives that go beyond that single sentence. And let me explain. Google is a company that has done some pretty extraordinary things. In fact, we've kind of made a habit of making the extraordinary ordinary. How many of you remember the first time you zoomed in from space and looked at your own backyard? Wasn't that amazing? Yeah. It was like, wow. I remember the first time I picked up my Android phone and I said, navigate me to the museum in San Francisco with the King Tut exhibit. And it said, navigating to the D. Young Museum. I was like, wow. Or even Google search. We sometimes forget how magical it is to type in something and from the billions of the world's web pages, get you the right one.
I have to say that I don't want to be too much of a fanboy, but the first time I used Google Plus, I hated it because I was posting to a private circle. I didn't know, I didn't post publicly, so I got no responses. What a lame thing. What the hell is Scoble talking about? And then finally I posted publicly, and I'll tell you, the first time I posted publicly and the comments just started flooding in, they were positive, they were intelligent, they were long. It was like the first time I saw Macintosh. The first time I saw Macintosh, it was on Mariani Drive, and Mike Boych took me in the back of this building, and under no non-disclosure, he showed me Mac Paint and Mac Write, and it was like the skies, the clouds parted, the angels started singing, and it was kind of that moment for me with Google Plus after I started posting publicly.
So well, thank you. Comparing Google Plus to the early versions of the Macintosh is quite a compliment. So thank you for that. Talking about Google, while we've done things, I said making the extraordinary ordinary, there are some things Google could have done better. While we've organized the world's pages and information, we asked ourselves what would happen if Google did more than pages but understood people. Mm-hmm. What if we could become an engine, not just for information, but we really understood individuals? It would unlock all sorts of scenarios. And when we looked at our services, which were wildly popular, things like YouTube and Chrome and Android and Google Search.
And Buzz.
Well, some weren't as popular. Or Gmail. People use these services every day. And yet, our notion of who you are, who is Guy, who are the people that matter to him in his life, was different. So if I took a picture in Android and I wanted to share that with my family, or if I wanted to be in Gmail and share something with my family, or if I wanted to upload something on YouTube and share that with my family, or if I did a search for a disease my father was struggling with and I wanted to highlight that just to my family, it was all different. And we said, if we could build a common notion of an understanding of your identity and your relationships, we could make Google better for the user. And so it became obvious to us that, yes, we could in fact, go build a unifying social layer across all of Google's properties. Now, the challenge is that some people have a very hard time understanding that. To kind of illustrate, could we have our slide up? I'm going to use an illustration to make my point.
Okay.
I suspect most of you see a duck. This is a pretty famous illustration. It first appeared in Harper's Weekly in November of 1892. So it's an illustration that's pretty old. It was done by a famous psychologist, and he drew this illustration to make a point. And his point was that what we see is very heavily influenced by our own experiences and our expectations. So children normally would say this is a duck. But when he ran the test on Easter, you know what children saw? What did they see? A bunny. Do you guys see the rabbit? Look at the beak of the duck and look at his ears. And look at the bunny facing the other way. How many of you can see the bunny? Look at that. Look at that. And so what ends up happening today with things like Google Plus is people's expectations, their experience with social sites has been very traditional. Social sites is this walled garden I go to, I share with my friends, I get ads in there, and that's a social site. And the idea that we would build a social layer across the services people love and use every day, across Gmail, across YouTube, across Chrome, that's difficult for them to understand until they experience it. And then when they see it, they see that when we're not building a duck, we're building a rabbit.
So why did the press quote Eric Schmidt as saying, you know, it's an authentication identification system? What's that about?
Well, I think Eric was accurate, right? Sometimes the words get overloaded. But the idea that Google would know your name and the people that mattered in your life was important. I mean, if it's amazing how much better Google can be if we even know the tiniest bit about you. Let me give you an example. This is an example my friend Alan, who runs the knowledge team at Google, uses, and I think it's a particularly powerful example. He says, imagine if Google only knew one bit of information about you. Suppose we knew you were just a vegetarian. That's all we knew. How would Google change if we knew that to be true? Well, let me see. If you did a search for restaurants, do you think maybe we would surface up the vegetarian restaurants?
Mm-hmm.
If we were going to highlight what your friends had to say, do you think we'd optimize as a ranking function your friends who are also vegetarian? Of course we would. So many of Google services would change.
But where do you draw the line in this? Because, yeah, I mean, the example of I'm vegetarian, so you shove vegetarian restaurants at me is fine and dandy. But, I mean, you know, we could go, you know, are you still not doing any evil? I mean, you know, where do you draw the line on privacy here?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is if we do things that are evil, with one click, you can leave Google. I mean, I think people forget our service, we're there not in any way locking in users' data. And if we break the user's trust, why, we can lose to competitors very easily. And it's something we take very, very seriously. In fact, that's why we built Circles, so that people could have a social service that reflected the real world, where everybody is not your friend, right? But somebody is your family, this is a college buddy, this is a coworker, and we were very, very respectful of privacy. And so we think personalization can be very good, and the results are going to show in usage, whether people use it or whether they don't.
Okay. Can you give us an update of some metrics? I mean, you know, in the last week or so, I think we heard, you know, that Google Plus users are only on Google Plus 3 minutes a month, and Facebook is, I don't know, 3 days a month. So where are we here in terms of, well, it's only 6 months. And you know what? You should adjust this thing because it's bouncing, and so that's why.
You know, I actually told them in the back, I said, that's likely to happen, and they said it won't happen. I think they misjudged how big my ears are. Hopefully that's a little bit better and it
yes.
won't bounce.
So okay. Where are you in metrics?
So let me just ask, how many of you here use Google Plus? Oh my God, you guys must all be Casper the Friendly Ghost. The numbers are pretty staggering. You know, we released some numbers last week. We formally used to talk about how many signed up users we had.
Mm-hmm.
We used to say, you know, we crossed 10 million, we crossed 40 million. At our earnings call in January, we announced that we had crossed 90 million signed up users. And last week, we decided to switch our metrics and use what others had been using, which is how many come back monthly, we call that a 30-day active, how many come back daily. We have a Google Plus user signed in, coming to Google, over 100 million 30-day actives and over 50 million one-day actives. Now that is, to put that in perspective, that is the fastest growing service we've ever seen at Google. We opened to the public in September. And so the usage, the adoption, the upgrade people are making to Google Plus has been pretty exciting for us and utterly fantastic.
So just for utter clarity, you're saying, with these metrics, in the case of the first, the 100 million number, people have come back to Google Plus within 30 days and done something.
That's exactly right.
They didn't just go to YouTube or some other Google property.
No.
Google Plus.
There's where the definition is incorrect.
Okay.
Our definition of Google Plus, you can think of Google Plus as Google 2.0. It's the next generation of Google. The old Google, each product was siloed. Your identity and how you shared with your family mm-hmm. was different across every product. In the new Google, which we could have called Google 2.0, mm-hmm. we called it Google Plus. In the new version of Google, we know your name. We understand your circles. And we make every service better. And so what we're counting in those numbers is somebody who decides to sign up for Google Plus, mm-hmm. creates a public profile, mm-hmm. and then comes back to a Google service that is optimized for them. Meaning you go to YouTube, and now we're showing you videos on the homepage from people in your circles or that you've posted. You go to Gmail, and there we now have mail from your circles.
But it doesn't necessarily mean the person went to what I consider the silo of Google Plus and posted, plus one, shared, or commented.
Well, I think your definition would be akin to our social competitor, counting only one aspect, let's say the stream.
Okay.
But if you use their messaging product, if you use their events product, if you use their photos product, mm-hmm. if you used their like button, it doesn't count. Well, we think that's crazy.
Okay.
We think that's truly crazy. And so, I think people continue to see the duck, and if you look and see what we're building, you can see the rabbit that we're pulling out of the hat.
Okay.
It's pretty exciting. Okay. We are really building something magical here. And I think over time, we're just getting started. It's hard to believe it's been a few months. But wait till you see what we're going to do next. Wait till you see how all of Google comes together in an integrated, beautiful, simple experience for users. And, the early indications for those of you who've used Google Plus and used things like Circles or Hangouts or Instant Upload, you know what a great experience it can be. And that's just in the last few months. We're going to get a lot better.
Okay. So what do you make of these social media experts, particularly Forbes columnists, who say, I came to Google Plus, none of my friends are here. Nobody answered me. Nobody commented to me. Nobody did anything. It's a ghost town. Vic is blowing smoke at us. This is an abject failure. Where are they getting this? Where are they coming from?
I would give them a couple of answers. The first answer is make sure you're using it correctly. There is, like as you pointed out, sometimes people will post to just an empty circle or a limited circle and not realize that, hey, there's a public chip, that we offer the best of private sharing or mm-hmm. public sharing. And you can turn that dial. We say, Bradley, my partner at Google, says Google Plus is as good for a whisper as it is for a shout. Most people don't realize this, but the majority of content shared on Google Plus, the majority, more than half, is shared privately to circles. And so you may visit a profile, and you may say, well, this profile's empty, and there's nothing being shared here. No, that's not true. There's nothing being shared with you. Maybe they're just not that much into you yet. But in fact...
No, inconceivable.
Yes. It's amazing.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. I look at my own usage patterns, and I think people think, oh, Vic, you post a lot on Google+. I do post publicly, but the vast majority of my posting is to my family. Google Plus has revolutionized how my family, who used to use other networking services and still use those other networking services, they don't work for Google. They're spread all over the world. They're teenagers, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds. How Google Plus has revolutionized that sharing. Because there's a family circle, and everybody shares into that, and the world outside doesn't see that.
So I was in a car yesterday with Robert Scoble, which is an interesting experience in and of itself. And, he's telling me, what I don't understand about Google Plus is on that right side where they're suggesting people, and I click on some suggestion, and the guy has never posted anything. So Google's an idiot. I mean, Google's stupid. They're telling me to follow these people or circle these people who never post publicly. And you're saying that that's because those people are basically sharing privately?
Well, there's in Robert Scoble, because he's such a special case, there are some unique things that are going on. In most cases, Google uses all the signals we can to try to recommend people that make sense for you.
Okay.
Once you become a celebrity like Robert Scoble and you have you know, close to a million people who are following you, our algorithms can probably do a better job of recognizing, hey, you're a celebrity, you've got a million people following you. It becomes a little bit trickier to find out who really matters to you in your life. And then the final point is the one that you mentioned. Google may recommend someone to you. And as of this point, that person may not have shared anything in a public state. So it looks like this person hasn't shared anything. But as I just said, the majority of content shared on Google Plus is shared privately to circles. And so it just may be a matter of time until that person gets a notification
okay.
that says, Robert Scoble has added you to a circle. And then they add him back, and then you see the sharing begin.
Okay. So tell me, you know, my behavior on Google Plus, what I post, what I share, what I plus, you know, what I comment, does it affect the ads that I receive when I go elsewhere on the internet?
It does not today. but we should be clear, it is our goal to make ads into content. Ads that are not, we want ads to be relevant. And it doesn't make sense to serve an ad to someone who is not interested in that topic at all. You know, our goal really is to understand you and serve you more relevant information. Now, let me tell you, there's a bright line between our approach when it comes to advertising and that of our competitors. You know, we think we should not be injecting ads into your most intimate social experiences. You know, when you look at a photo of your daughter or you share a photo from your best friend's party last night, we don't think there has to be an ad there. You know, we think maybe that's not the best time to serve an ad. Maybe the right time is at the moment of commercial intent. And so our approach is radically different. You, for example, may say you plus one an appliance or plus one a restaurant. And you know when we show that? When maybe 3 months later, your friend is searching for a restaurant in Napa, mm-hmm. and it says, Guy Kawasaki plus one this. We think that's the relevant time,
okay.
not when you're looking at a photo of your daughter. And so our approach marries the best of social with the best of commercial intent. By the way, commercial intent is what we call search, something we've been doing for a decade, and we think that's a better approach.
So can I translate for you? What I heard you say is that the Facebook album ripoff of your album has ads in it and you don't? Is that what you basically said?
You know, I tried to give you some insight into why. You know, but by the way, I'm going to speak a little bit more about this. You know, sometimes people succumb to hyperbole. You know, myself included, I'll admit it. But some of the hyperbole going around in this industry is kind of crazy. You know, if you go to a baseball game, they got 60,000 people in a stadium, of course that's a good time to serve display advertising. Of course you're probably going to see a banner for a soda company there. You have 60,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what they're there for? They're there to watch the game. Now people go, well, Vic, in social we can customize. Well, guess what? I've seen billboards that at a game that say, everyone in section 214, you get a free pizza. You know, yeah, that's slightly more effective. But they're still there to watch the game. And when it comes to social services, I still believe people are there to socialize with their friends, with their family, that may not be the best place to serve commercial intent.
So are you saying that for the foreseeable future, there will be no ads in the Google Plus album?
That's correct.
Okay.
In the photo album, we have no plans to inject ads into your photo albums.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
We think we know that and believe that it's a better user experience when your friend sees the recommendation for the restaurant in Napa when he's searching for the restaurant in Napa.
Okay.
And I think that model is a better model
okay.
for both the consumer, the advertiser, and for Google.
Okay. So speaking of searching, you know, I asked you about the delivery of ads based on my Google Plus behavior. What does my Google Plus behavior do for the search results that I see?
We think it's pretty revolutionary. You know, we closely track user behavior, not critics' behavior. That's kind of fun to watch,
yeah.
but we watch user behavior. You know, if you think about an example, Canon just came out with a new camera. Maybe some of you heard that announcement, you know, the Canon 5D Mark III, right? Previously, if you had just done a search on Google, we would have given you a bunch of reviews, you know, maybe news articles, maybe pointed you to the Canon Rumors site.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use Google Plus, and you have people in your circles. Maybe you've added photographers like Trey Ratcliffe to your circles.
Mm-hmm.
What we surface now is their commentary live within minutes. So if Trey makes a comment about what he believes this camera is worth or not, it shows right there in Google search results. Someone in your circles, maybe a friend of your friends who is a Canon or Nikon enthusiast. We think that's better. That's a better model.
Do you have a sense of how many people have turned off social search?
It's an incredibly tiny amount.
Well,
good, and by the way,
but to be fair, it's on by default.
Yeah,
right?
But and it's for the first time, unlike we did before, right on that page, right at the top, it says push a button and turn off personalization. And even before this, it wasn't that hard. It wasn't that easy to turn off personalization.
Mm-hmm.
We made it right at the top, a single button. You can toggle. You can say, turn off personalization, turn on personalization. I know for me, it's changed my behavior. You know, I like to vacation down sometimes in various spots like Hawaii or Mexico. Now if I type in Cabo and I go to images, not only do I see the images of Cabo, but I see the images taken by my friends. It's really great. I can say, oh, I didn't know Guy goes there as well. I can call, hey, Guy, I see you took a picture at the same resort. Let me tell you, where did you eat? And we're connecting people in new ways. And I think the most impressive thing is that this is literally an effort that's a few months old. We opened this up in September. And if we can accomplish this much, it's March. If we can accomplish this much in 6 months, what more can we do in the upcoming years?
So speaking of accomplishing so much in 6 months, like what's with the API? I mean, Google Plus API is an oxymoron.
Yeah.
What's the story here?
I am 100% to blame. Yeah. This is a case where you can put the blame squarely on me. We certainly have the technical capability to open up the API right now and give rewrite access to the stream to everybody. I just don't want to do it.
Why?
Because I have seen others open up APIs to their services, develop an entire ecosystem of third-party clients, and then a few years later change their mind and shut down that ecosystem and piss off developers. When Google releases an API, we want you to know that we're going to back it up and that we're not going to revoke access to it. Today, if I opened up API access, write access to the stream, chances are most people's streams would be polluted because we need to rank that information correctly. A third party injecting content into your stream could easily overwhelm your stream.
But you know, on my Android phone, I want to take a picture. They want to click on the share icon. And right now, I see on the share icon, I see email, I see Gmail, I see Twitter, I see Facebook. I do not see Google+. When can I share from an Android phone camera?
So you can actually do that through the Android intent model. The Android intent model, the way the
what?
Android team... Yeah, the Android... I do it all the time. How many of you share photos from Android to Google Plus? Anybody here? Wow, lots of hands. Now, they do it by using the intent model.
Well, they're all Google employees.
Okay. Don't put your hand up. Don't put your hand up if you're a Google employee. And obviously,
see, there's no hands.
Okay, once again, how many of you share from Android to Google Plus? I see lots of hands.
From the camera. Not from the camera.
From the Google Plus app.
Yeah, but okay, so there's two scenarios, right? So one is I take a picture, I want to share from the camera. The other is the starting point is I want to take a picture. Why don't I boot Google Plus, the app?
Oh, I see.
That doesn't make sense.
I see. What you want is you don't want to go to Google Plus. You don't want to go to any other service. You want to use the native Android camera app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because of a lack of APIs?
No. That's just a matter of timing. You know, we did the ICS release in November.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Android is on a little bit of a different time schedule because you have to release the version. You have to get it to OEMs. They have to test it with their phones. They have to get it to the carriers. The carriers have to do testing. And many months later, consumers get their phone. I suspect many of you yet have ice cream sandwich on your phones. And so you get an idea of the lag. And so,
how many of you have ICS on your phone?
Yeah, good.
See, all the Google employees.
That is a lot of Google employees. And so that's just a function of Andy's team injecting that right into the native app. But across all of Google, you're going to go see this kind of integration.
So before the end of 2012, will I be able to post to Google Plus without using Google Plus?
When you say post to Google Plus,
I want to use Buffer app, or I want to use, you know, Hootsuite without joining the enterprise program and begging someone to be in the beta. You know,
I can't tell you that we're going to do that. I hope we can get to it by the end of 2012, but I'm going to release that API when we're confident that we're not going to screw over developers. You know,
isn't screwing over developers a moral and ethical thing? Can't you just decide your moral and ethical today? What are you worried about?
No, if you release the API and then revoke it because the user experience is terrible and our ranking is not good in the stream, then that's a terrible experience for developers. And so I could follow the other model. Right?
Why don't you? I think you should follow the other model.
Yeah. I could. You know what we could? We could open up the API with a huge caveat that says we may change this API at any moment. We don't guarantee any consistency.
Well, they're all Facebook developers. They're used to that anyway.
Yeah. We hold ourselves to a higher standard. It turns out we actually have a developer ecosystem on Android, on the web, in Chrome. And we're one Google to them. So we can't act one way with developers on Google Plus and think that that's not going to affect the reputation of developers who are building for Android. You know, we're really trying to be thoughtful about this and do right by developers. And sometimes that means restraint. The reality is, as Google Plus continues to grow, as we continue to gain momentum, developers will always want access to the stream.
Well, they want it now.
Yes. You know, it's kind of funny. We get these messages that, A, we're a ghost town, and, B, developers desperately want to get in. And so
but the two are not necessarily contradictory. It may be that, you know, some people believe Google Plus is a ghost town and developers want to get in, so it's not a ghost town.
Well, I'm willing to take the heat on this. I'm the one that's holding this back. Like I said, we could open up the API tomorrow, but I'm waiting until the time is right that we believe that it won't degrade the stream experience,
okay,
that we have the appropriate ranking. When that time is right, boy, you can be assured I'll be happy to announce it. It's just not today.
Okay. I want to know, just out of curiosity, when I post something to my followers, how real time is it? Do they all like instantly see the post? And similarly, when someone comments on someone's post, does everybody else see it? I mean, how does it work?
We aimed to be as real time as possible, and I think that was one of the things that made Google Plus so magical. You know, you made a post and you see people comment, and right there on the stream, you see these live comments come in, and it made a big difference. You know, the best way I could explain it was when I was a child, my father used to have me call my relatives in India, and the phone lines had an echo because we went over satellite, and it changed the nature of the conversation with my uncle. I would talk, we'd wait for the echo, then he would talk, and unfortunately, that's what happens when you're not real time. But the moment you go real time, it changes. People become much more fluid. And I think in Google Plus, because of our emphasis on real time, it caused a more fluid conversation. People would say, well, the conversation over here is better. And I think a part of that was that real time capability we built in. Now, specifically, you said, what about your posts? You know, how fast is it delivered? Well, it turns out that for most people, it's real time. But as you start climbing in follower count, as it were, and I think in your case, you're approaching a million or over a million, you know, you got a large...
It's 1,399,967 right
now. Wow.
You know, give or take.
Well, congratulations.
No, but you know what? I attribute that to be on the Google Plus suggested user list. It's not necessarily that I deserve that, but anyway.
Well, we can take you off that list.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
That's pretty easy to do.
No, I'm happy to be right next to Brittany.
Yeah, so. Well, we actually, the suggested user list we think is a great way for new users to get interesting content immediately. It's training wheels until they grow.
Just as an aside, speaking as someone who does have 1.4 million users, could you put commas? Because it's hard to read the number.
We in our wildest dreams, when we opened up this project, we never anticipated that problem.
If you said
that we would have people with millions of followers in a matter of months. You know, come on, we weren't that, you
know,
crazy.
Well, Zuckerberg just went right up there.
Yeah, I remember the early days. In the early days, he got to a couple hundred thousand pretty quickly, and today people are in the millions. You know, it took our other competitive services often years to get that many followers. It was hard for us to dream that within 6 months we'd have people that had a problem, that they had too many followers. It's kind of ironic, once again, the other discussion you opened up with people saying it's either a ghost town and others complaining that we don't put commas because their follower count is so high. Now, I will say in your case, while we aim to be real time, when you have that many followers, we have to fan out across our service. And that fan out can delay that post. Sometimes by 30 seconds, sometimes by a minute. I know my posts sometimes, based on my follower count, can take up to a minute, minute and a half to get actually to display. And so it varies, and obviously we're optimizing our services to get faster and faster.
So that I should, that's good to know. That's kind of a cooling off period where I can change stuff before
You actually can't. In that 1 minute, we're starting to fan out to all of your million users.
It's gone.
Yeah, you can. One of the great things about Google Plus is you can go in
obviously
and
edit. Yes.
Right, but we'll go back and try to redo the fan out then.
Okay. Can you talk to me about spam? So, you know, I joined in the end of July, and I liken it to the swimming pool at the peninsula in Hong Kong. You know, the infinity pool?
Yeah.
And you look out, and it's this beautiful swimming pool, and there's no turds floating in it, you know, and all that. And you post the comment, or you post something, you get intelligent comments back from real people, you know, with real avatars and stuff. And then September 1, it was Caddyshack. You know, is it turds? Is it candy bars? What's all this crap in my pool? I swear a lot of them are your relatives. And it's like a lot of one word, LOL, what the fuck, you know, whatever. It's all this kind of stuff. Like, it's killing me. Actually, it's related to my question about APIs, because I have stopped posting Pacific time, 9 p.m., because I know that, shall I say, parts of Southeast Asia are up at that point. So if I post at Pacific time, 9 p.m., I get a lot of crap, so I don't post.
Yeah.
So talk to me. What are you doing anything about spam?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we're doing quite a bit. There's a couple of ways to answer that question. One is, you should know that the same spam team that did spam for Gmail is the same spam team that's innovating in Google+.
Okay.
So we think we have among the best people in the world on the problem. And it turns out that we've made dramatic progress. For those people who use Google+, you'll note that in September, as you point out, when we came out of invite-only mode and we opened up to the world, it changed sometimes the tone, because we're letting all of humanity into the service.
Right.
And people have different cultural expectations. In some cultures, a short note, hello there, guy, is acceptable. In other cultures, it's a valueless comment. And that's a more difficult problem. How do you account for cultural differences of what's a good comment
and
a bad
comment? Fair enough.
In Japan, for example, with one of the popular rock bands that has joined Google+, it's very common to make short little comments back to that band, and the band members love it. That's acceptable. And so we have to account for those cultural differences, and that's a bit of a more challenging problem.
Okay.
However, there's another problem, which is legitimate spam. These are people who signed up and they abuse the system. They hop on your comments and they say, oh, please come to my website and donate for this cause or that cause. Or they, you know, point you to a scammy page that tries to undermine your system. Those we're doing an increasingly better job of capturing, marking automatically, and then hiding away. In fact, we just had a recent launch, I think on Monday. Many of you, particularly those of you who have many, many followers, will note that when you post, we not only identify algorithmically all the spam, but we automatically hide it and then put it behind the click.
So I noticed that. So I thought it was other readers who were reporting it. It's not? You guys are machine?
Yeah, we actually...
The machine is doing it, not my other readers?
It's a combination. Our machine algorithms are fantastic. You'd be surprised how quickly our machine algorithms can determine that this is a suspicious account. We can look at the age of the account. We can look at, for example, it's pretty easy with machine learning to recognize that somebody is following the most popular people and then posting on their comments the same link. And we can detect that in seconds, and we can shut that down. But we also found people doing some very, very clever things, like using real human beings and making it more difficult for our systems to track. But we're getting better and better at that. And then finally, we'd also use user reports. So if you see somebody making an obnoxious comment that you think is spam or offensive, and we put a button right next to every one of them where you can report it, that is a powerful signal for our machine learning algorithms that helps us detect those things.
And how do you prevent the false positive where, let's say you post something about Republicans. And so, not that I would ever do that.
Remember, you're in Texas.
Right, right. Let's say it's something about gun control.
Remember, you're in Texas.
Right. Or how about I run the California Fish and Game, and I shot a mountain lion in Idaho, and so there could
and
be.
And you were a Texan.
Yeah. So what happens when someone who someone is reporting you not because you're spam, not because you're doing something bad, but because they disagree philosophically.
Yeah. Well, it takes.
Does the machine say, yeah, spam?
No. First of all, it turns out very few people do that. People generally are very respectful. Mm-hmm. They do really use the report abuse button for abuse. Really abusive folks. Mm-hmm. And very few people that we can detect will do it because they disagree with the argument. They understand that there's validity in the arguments. But even if they do that, we don't take just one signal.
Okay.
We're really thoughtful about the signals. We're able to see all sorts. I won't give away our little secrets, but we use many, many different techniques to determine what is abuse. And we're pretty good at getting it with very few false positives.
Okay.
And by the way, in the case where we get a false positive, you, the author of the post, can say, Google, show me everything you've hidden.
And restore.
And restore. And when you restore, because we made a mistake, boy, do we really take that seriously. And we analyze the entire trace of how that particular comment was marked as abuse.
Including the person who reported it as the abuse?
Absolutely. We can even figure out bad signals by people who are reporting abuse. We're pretty good at this stuff. Huh. We're getting better.
Huh. As Google Plus gets more and more popular, is there going to be a day where you're going to decide, I have 1.4 million followers. Are you going to decide that I'm going to look at those 1.4 million followers, how many have ever commented, plus one, shared, have ever interacted, and I'm only going to show that subset the post, i.e., is there going to be a Google Plus edge rank?
I think we will always allow people to see all of your comments if they are following you.
Okay.
So if someone decides to say, look, I've got a circle, and that circle is called, interesting people. When they click on interesting people, or they click on their family circle, or they click on any circle, we always show everything.
Okay.
So you can always be assured all content will go there. The only place where we're doing ranking is if you go to the stream view, mm-hmm. the top-level view. And there we give you control. So, for example...
With the
slider, that's exactly right. We allow you to have control. The user can say, I want to see every post from my family. I don't ever want to miss any. But I've got Scoble in interesting people circle. And the interesting people circle, I just want to see most of what's there. And allow Google then to do a little bit of ranking to determine, hey, that this particular post by Guy has gotten a lot of plus ones, a lot of comments. It's really great. Surface that in your mainstream. We think this approach gives us the benefit of really giving ranking and also allows you, the user of the service, to be able to tell Google what you want, including when you want to see every post by an individual. Right, and so it's I think a nice middle ground that works for us.
Okay,
and we've been in it for 6 months, open to the public. I'm not going to rule anything out in the future. We're learning, we're adjusting, we're trying new algorithms, we're trying to make it even better.
Okay. So we have about 20 minutes left, and I would like to now open the up for the audience to ask questions. So do we have mic runners?
Yeah, I do see mics. See mics right there.
Oh, they're not. Okay, so if you have a question, would you go to the mic and just speak up? Okay, we'll go over here.
Afternoon. I was in Barcelona last week where Eric Schmidt was talking, and he was talking much like you have done, Vic, on the unification of Google services. If everyone in this room was to search for a term like mobile, we'd all get different results. And that's because the clever people at Google have got some idea in the background about what we are and what we like, as you kind of indicated earlier. Will Google be making it public, those kind of what they think about us? So you mentioned vegetarians earlier. So would we see in our profile, Google thinks you're a vegetarian, so that we can say yes or no that we're not, and therefore correct that filter bubble that's around us?
Yeah, we actually do that today. You can go into Google, into our dashboards, and we'll tell you, particularly with our advertising systems, what we know about you, and we give you the ability to correct it or to delete it. It's important to know that the personalization we're talking about is for your eyes only. And so as we surface what we know about you, it's for you in a logged-in state to see these things and either correct them or delete them entirely. And so we need to make sure that you're comfortable, that this is adding value, that's making the service better. Otherwise, we know people just won't use it. And so it's an important question you asked.
So I haven't actually seen that, so apologies if it's already in there somewhere. But so you're saying it is on a human level, that Google thinks that you're a vegetarian, or Google, that's how it's got it.
That's right. Everything that we infer from you, infer about you, that you haven't explicitly told us, we surface that to you and we allow you to change that. Of course, you have to be logged in, so we can show this only for your eyes only.
Thanks, Vic.
Yeah, sure.
All right, next.
Identity. What a person is and what he is or she is to the world is a multiphasic thing. I mean, we have different identities that we present to different people. Google has chosen that your identity, or at least your valid identity, is the one that has been placed onto your driver's license, birth certificate, and what's been given to you at birth. I am not Martin Vogelmolny. I am M to most of the people who know me in real life. And that has been the case. I don't choose to go to the government and have that sealed, stamped, and delivered on my driver's license. When can I have my identity back, please?
Well, several months ago, we announced support for pseudonyms. So anytime you showed us that, hey, look, I'm known as M on this particular site, my friends know me as M, we allow you to then use M. And we've had a number of people have their established pseudonyms being used on Google+. I think the important thing is that we took our time to get this thing right. And we didn't have support for pseudonyms in the beginning as we launched the service, frankly, because we grossly underestimated in the beginning the adoption we would see. We had no internal models that predicted we would see this kind of uptake. And number two, frankly, we were afraid. You know, if we leaked someone's identity, you know, for example, Blogger today allows you to use M as your identity. And in Google+, because we were just, you might want to call it in beta or alpha, you know, we were just releasing it, we weren't sure, technically, if you signed in as M, if we would surface your Gmail identity, for example. Remember, the former Google, the Google of old, was built all in silos. Mm-hmm. And we were stitching together 18, 19 different services together. And as you know, as those of you who are computer scientists, understand that you can have a lot of bugs, and you need to make sure they're hardened. And to make a promise to someone coming out of the gate that we will guarantee your pseudonym, we will guarantee your identity, and then have someone across another Google service say, hey, guess what? You thought you were M, but over here in Google Maps, we connected it with your email address, and we outed you as John Maddock. Well, that's crazy. And so we decided, let's take the heat, let's be thoughtful, let's get it right, and let's announce support for pseudonyms as fast as we can. And that took us a few months, given the uptake. We are not done. We deeply understand the use case that you brought up. And I think, you know, other social networks have followed our example and announced support for pseudonyms. So I'm proud to say we're leading, and we're going to continue to push those bounds and continue to make the service better. It's just a matter of sequencing. And when can we get things done? It's literally only been a matter of months since we've been out. So
it may sound a little strange to ask Google to be more transparent, but the process to get unblocked is not very transparent. I've now been reblocked about for the fourth time now, and I really would like to just use Google+.
Yeah,
I continue using
you.
Google services normally. That would be the only thing I could possibly request is more openness in the process to be reinstated.
Yeah, feedback noted. Thank you.
Okay. Next.
Vic Guy, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
My name is James, and I'm an ethical computer hacker. And one of the attacks I do is actually evil twin attack, and it's been working very well. And I wanted to follow up with his identity question is, how are you able to basically find out if the real person is standing up? How do you know Guy's account is actually Guy?
That's a great question. I mean, what you're really asking for is very strong identity. You know, how can we absolutely ensure that Britney Spears or Guy or John Smith is really John Smith? And how do you do that when there's multiple John Smiths? And so I think today we have a rudimentary system, a very rudimentary system in Google+, which is that if you're a celebrity or a well-known person, we often use out-of-band channels to verify your account. And so, for example, with people like Britney Spears or the White House with President Obama, we go out of band, and we verify that account, and you see that check mark that says verified. We have contemplated and frankly are working on other forms that are more scalable. I can't announce anything at this time. But really, in the ideal solution, you could have strong identity for those who chose it. And so that way you could look at somebody's profile and have a reasonable level of assurance that this person is who they say they are. But that's not on the immediate roadmap. I don't think we're going to have that capability in the next few weeks or months.
When you say you said you go out of bounds?
Out of band.
What does that mean?
That means you call the White House. They're on the phone with you. You figure out really, okay, who's going to set this up? What's their password? What's their guy ID? You know that's the White House Plus page, and you verify it. It's not a system that's available for everybody.
But nobody called me up. How did they know that was really me?
I took care of that for you.
And who took care of Brittany?
We actually worked with Brittany's team.
Really?
Yeah, we want to make sure that it's, you know, if you got Brittany has over 2 million followers on our circle, on our service. That many people have added her to circles. We want to do right by our users and make sure they're adding the right Brittany.
Okay. Next.
Well, first of all, Brittany is beating you guys, so work on that.
Well, you know.
Brittany is beating us, and I view that largely as a metric of success.
Agreed. Yeah, right.
Yeah, if I'm the most popular person on Google Plus, that's a big problem.
My question is, to what degree did you anticipate or expect the powerful emotion and anger that came with the sort of share bro movement? And I guess based on that, what have you learned and how has that changed?
I'm sorry,
the way
I didn't hear you. With what?
The share bro movement, the whole Google Reader obsessives who thought that Plus was killing their product. I don't know. Are you familiar with this?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess there's a parallel Google Reader now because of the people who thought when you took out the sharing features of Google Reader and moved them to Plus, a lot of people were very angry by that. And so I guess there's a competitor, HiveMind, that is being built. So I guess you can't answer that question, but I guess the idea that there was a real community involved, and I'm sure Buzz had this similar thing. Maybe you could speak to that as well.
Yeah,
when you kill something and move it to a new platform.
Look, there are communities that that get involved in products, even products that are not very successful. Like as you mentioned, Buzz. I can think of others like Wave had a passionate community. And when you make a decision to shut down a product, it's very hard. It's incredibly hard. You have to ask yourself, is this really the right thing to do? Could we put our resources elsewhere? Is it better to our consumers if we're more clear about our message? Those are never easy decisions. So I understand that there may be a community that's upset about a particular feature. And as you point out, if Google doesn't do its job well, competitors will. And so we try to do our best. And sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong.
Next.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Joe from Vancouver, and I just wanted to ask you sorry about that. You said commercial intent was a filter for advertising. Okay. Anyway, I was wondering if or why this doesn't apply on YouTube.
So I'm going to repeat the question because I'm not sure if everyone heard it. But the question was, you had said that commercial intent is a filter for advertising. Well, then why doesn't that apply on YouTube? And I think, you know, with the commercial intent, we're just learning. The Plus One button was released, you know, about a year ago, and about 6 months ago we released Google Plus. And so we obviously want to serve you the most relevant advertising we can at the point of commercial intent. But historically, Google services were siloed. So what you did on YouTube was completely different than what you did in Gmail or Search or Android. And so the ability for Google to realize that, hey, you might be interested in seeing this restaurant review that's on YouTube in Napa, recommended by your friends, was extremely limited. And so I think you're going to see our advertisements get more relevant and get better, not just on Google Plus or Search, but everywhere, including YouTube. And I think...
Because of Google Plus?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, even the simplest notion of knowing whether you're a male or you're female or you live in the Bay Area or you live in Taiwan, those are powerful signals that allow us to do much more, to serve you much more relevant information. And that's across all Google services, YouTube included.
Cool, thanks.
Okay, next.
Hey, Vic, it's John from Read Write Web.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hangouts are amazing to me. They're being used for so many versatile, different things, but they've got to be really expensive to run. I want to hear in your words why Google is building Hangouts.
So you're right.
What's the question?
The question was, Hangouts are really amazing. I think they're awesome. I love Google Plus. You said that, right?
Yeah, I said that. Yeah, definitely.
But, they've got to be incredibly expensive to run. What is the thinking behind Hangouts, and why do you do that? So let me give you a 2 or 3 minute answer, because I don't think the world has ever heard this story. We looked at video conferencing, and we said, why aren't families connecting on video? Like, everybody has Wi-Fi in their home, they have computers, they've got cameras. Why isn't it that you and your family don't connect on video? And we found 3 reasons. Number one, it was expensive. Group video chat costs money. And we said, fine, we'll make it free. Number two, it's complicated. You got to install a client, get past the virus detection on your Windows PC, log into an account, make sure your dad can do the same thing. And so we said, let's make it easy, build in the browser. But the third problem we found was the hardest, which was it was a social problem. It's really awkward to send a video chat invite to Lisa at 8 o'clock at night and have Lisa reject you and go, well, I'm not really dressed right now. That social awkwardness of starting a video chat and maybe your colleague or your friend or your family is not the right time. How do you solve the social problem? And what we discovered was the answer was right in front of us in real life. In real life, how many of us go to our next door neighbor, knock on the door, and go, hey, John, I just stopped by to say hi. How many of you do that to your next door neighbor? Like almost no one. Well, why? Because you feel like you're interrupting your neighbor. It's kind of weird just to say hi. But if your neighbor is sitting outside on his porch reading a newspaper and you're walking by, that is a soft social signal that mm-hmm. says, come on by and say hello. And oh, by the way, if one of your neighbors is talking to one of your neighbors on his porch, we find you're much more likely to walk up and talk to them. And oh, by the way, our research shows that if it's 3 people on the porch talking, more than likely you believe they're talking about you. And you feel compelled to walk up to them. And so what we did was we built Hangouts that allowed you just to publish to this family stream or any circle that you want. Just publish that circle. Hey, I'm hanging out. It's very casual. And if Lisa, your friend, is free at 8 o'clock, she joins. And as soon as she joins, we publicize it to the rest of the circle. And soon Mark sees that Vic and Lisa are hanging out. It's a party. And all of a sudden it goes 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people. And the duration of these Hangouts, when they get a number of people in them, is staggering. And we pick up the entire cost for free. And so far we've seen everyone from President Obama do the first ever live online community from the West Wing, all the way down to one of the most touching experiences was from Corey Fisk. Corey got multiple sclerosis in 1992, and she has not been outside of her house in years. She met a photographer named John. I'm going to mess up on his last name, so I'm not going to say it. But she met John, a photographer, and he did a photo walk. They met in a Hangout. He empathized so much with Corey's situation that he put Hangouts on a camera, connected it to his little camera, and he went outside in Canada in the snow. And Corey, who has never been outside of her house all these years because of multiple sclerosis, directed John to walk down to the creek, to turn to the left, to take a picture of the trees and the snow falling mm-hmm. and the lake. It was incredibly emotional. That's why we pay for it. Because if we can connect human beings together, not just connect them in status messages, but if we can connect people face to face to face, we can change the world. And that's what we're interested in making Google a platform that empowers passionate people to come together to do amazing things. And so what you're seeing with Hangouts is just the beginning of our plans. And we'll invest all that it takes to make scenarios like that happen.
Nice. Thanks, Vic.
Next.
Hello, this is Joshua Johnson, the founder of the UE Foundation. We connect the bottom line of the Fortune 500 to their philanthropy giving. And I was wanting to know from your Google search and connecting to Google Plus for philanthropy, and when people see philanthropy compared to a Chevy Volt campaign.
Before you got to get closer to the mic. You need to make love to the mic.
Let's. Okay.
Yeah.
That's much better. Thank you.
Sorry.
So,
like a Chevy Volt campaign compared to a Red campaign. It's. I was talking to Clout. They're like 20-1 in like comments and video shares and different things. How do you connect your advertisers that pay you a lot of money for the Google search How do you connect that to Google Plus and get them more comments or video views through philanthropy and connect their bottom line to their philanthropy giving?
Well, number one, we have to make it authentic. So we can't, you know, do things that are artificial. If you are an advertiser and you have a message that resonates with people, then the Google Plus platform can do some amazing things for you. We released some statistics last week in the New York Times. Some of you may have missed the import of those statistics. What we said for the first time is that any ad that you see in search, philanthropic ad or not, right? If it's socially annotated, we're seeing an uplift of 5 to 10% click-through rates. Now, for those of you who are in the world of marketing and who do advertising, you know there are not that many things that cause a 5 to 10% click-through rate uplift, right? And so we know our model is working. You know, we announced the plus one button a year ago, but we didn't have the data to show that our model of serving ads when they're relevant at the moment of commercial intent would work. Now we do. And the early results are really staggering.
Wait, could you explain that more? So what is social annotation of an ad?
So maybe you see an ad that you really like. Let's say you have a philanthropic organization or a charity you really believe in. And you see that and you plus one that.
Okay.
Later, your friend, many months later, decides he wants to contribute to the same charity. And he's Googling, you know, charities for clean water.
Okay.
Right there, among the charities that are serving various ads and advertising on Google, or we're contributing money so they can run these house ads, we now show that charity for clean water was plus one by Vic. Now, you may respect my opinion. And you may say, well, Vic plus one this thing. Our research shows that your click-through rate on that ad that says Vic plus one this is dramatically higher. And so the early results are pretty encouraging. It's that kind of approach that allows us not to jam ads into photos of your daughter, right? Because it's a better model. It's a better model. It's serving the ads when they're relevant. And that applies for charities as well. And it's really authentic word of mouth, what you care about, and then surfacing that at the right time.
Okay. Next.
Hello. My name is Dave Winner. I run a search engine optimization firm. And I just had a quick question for you. We were talking about how Google Plus shows up when you're logged in on search results. But also when you're logged in and you're in secure search, and we saw this month, one of my clients, 26,000 visits were not recorded because of the secure search. Is there any indication that we will be able to see that data in the future, or are we never going to be able to see that anymore when someone's logged in? On Google Analytics.
You know, I'm not sure I'm familiar with this particular issue. It sounds like an issue with HTTPS and Google Analytics.
Well, basically, when we look on analytics to see inbound search queries, it just says not provided because they were logged in to their Google account.
Yeah, so I think what's happening, and I'm not familiar with this particular issue. We can probably get you answers afterwards. But you are right that when you are logged in to Google+, we switch you to a much more secure form of search, HTTPS. Mm-hmm. And because we switch you to HTTPS search, there are side effects. For example, in analytics, businesses and reefers that we may or may not be able to report. And I think some of those are just bugs that we have to work through. As I said, we never anticipated 100 million people a month would come in on HTTPS secure search. Those numbers happened faster than anybody at Google dreamed of. And so we're dealing with some of those unintended side consequences, and I think you're describing one of those. Maybe if you can find us afterwards, I can make sure you get an answer to your question.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next, let's move it along.
Hi, I'm James Puckett from Knoxville. And I was curious how, as Google Plus learns more and more about its users, how it's... that personalization in our search results, I find myself clicking on things I wouldn't normally click on just to make sure that that sort of content gets included in my search results the next time. So I don't know if you guys have thought about that, but, I want to make sure that I get a good wide range of content. So I don't know if that makes sense, but...
I think it's a great idea. I think you're right. We have to make sure we balance what we show you. Be cognizant of things that are personalized to you, but also make sure you're seeing a wide range and you're not caught in a filter bubble. It's a situation we're very aware of, and we think we have some clever solutions, but not ready to talk about those details now.
Hey, next.
Hi, thanks for doing this. I'm Chris Howard from Laboo. We provide an alternative publishing model for authors. We've gone through offline startup accelerators like Mass Challenge and now through Techstars. And I was wondering whether Google, in particular Google Plus, was ever going to enter the startup incubating space, and if you have any ideas what they may be.
You know, it's not an area where I'm the expert. We have a team of people at Google called Google Ventures that is very, very much focused on this. And so I would suggest that you connect with them or connect with one of our members of our team, and we can get you connected.
Sure thing. Thanks so much.
So we have 18 seconds. And my friend Chris, who just asked a question, he works for a company called Libu. And believe it or not, can we use this as a segue for
sure.
me to get my plug in? Can we go back to slides here? So believe it or not, today I am releasing a book about Google Plus, just a labor of my love.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, what a coincidence. And even better, the suggested retail, or the, you know, it's an e-book only. It's less than a Starbucks grande latte, so it's $2.99. But my friends at Samsung have sponsored the book. So if you go to whattheplus.com very soon, or quickly, because there's a limited amount, it's free. So go to whattheplus.com, and you'll be able to download a copy of my new book about Google Plus that Vic loves, right?
I've read the book myself. Guy was kind enough to share it with me. It is absolutely fantastic. If you're new to Google Plus and you just want to get a sense of all the magic that's in Google Plus and how you can best use the service, this is an unbelievable resource. You got to get it.
So go now. Hurry. So I think we're out of time. Are we out of time, South by Southwest people? Yes. So you know, thank you very much. We will wait for the APIs with bated breath, I promise you.
Right. Thank you,
thank you very much for doing this,
thank
Vic.
You.